Okay, what's off limits for you? I just realized I've probably cussed four times in the
Oh, that's not off limits for me. Today we have a talk with Charlie Morrison, the chairman and CEO of Wingstop Incorporated, where he is responsible for leading the strategic direction of the company and its global operations. Charlie is an industry veteran with more than 25 years of experience with various companies, including Pizza Hut, Steak and Ale Restaurants, Kinko's, and Boston Market. He joined Wingstop in June of 2012. Global company. He had to do a huge pivot during the pandemic. And he's also, I'm honored to have him for my first live guest here in the Hardball Studios in Southlake, Texas. So let's get to know Charlie Morrison.
For human resources professionals who walk the fine line between providing strategic support and grabbing a baseball bat, welcome to HR Hardball, hosted by John Reeves Whitaker. This is your leadership moment, folks. Don't screw it up.
Everybody's doing what you're doing right now and trying to get a message out, and there's a lot of audience listening, right? People are consuming media so much differently right now, and so this is a big way to do it. So, yeah.
Are you consuming podcasts more than you used to?
No, I don't. You know, I was listening to your last one, and it was interesting. I sat there, and you guys were talking about all the books you read.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, COVID, I'm at home all the time. I try to binge watch, but I don't do much binge watching. I thought I could read, but first things first, let's get that surgery done.
Right.
And then I'll read.
Yeah.
I haven't read a damn thing.
You haven't done anything?
Nothing. It's crazy. I don't know why. I don't know what I've done with all my time, but I was listening to you and I was like, I pissed away a lot of time.
Well, here's the secret on the reading thing. There's an app called Blinkist, like Blink IST. Mm-hmm. You type in whatever your topic matter is that you're interested in, and it gives you mini versions of all the books.
Yep.
So anything. And I can read 3 books a day if I wanted to, but it's just the condensed version.
Mini versions, like they're this big, or they're
like, they call them blinks.
Like Cliff's Notes? Like
seven. Yeah, it's like
doing Cliff's Notes of a book. Okay. Yeah. So that's how you can get through them outside.
Yeah.
I was amazed. I was listening. I was like, damn, he reads a lot of books.
Yeah. No,
I don't read a lot of books.
No way.
Okay, what's off limits for you? I just realized I've probably cussed four times in the
Oh, that's first... not off limits for me.
Okay. All right. It's HR Hardball. I figure we're playing hardball.
we've talked about all kinds of stuff.
Okay.
So you're popular right now. What's the most common thing people are asking you? Because I don't want to ask you that.
Yeah, a lot of discussion work-wise about leadership, how we navigated COVID. I mean, the performance of the company's been through the roof. And I owe a lot of it to the culture of the company, how we formed it, my inspiration behind that, which was an author. So speaking of reading, what I did read, great author I really enjoy on business and culture is Patrick Lencioni. So I don't know if you know Pat Lencioni's work, but he...
celebrate his entire catalog.
You do.
I don't know him.
You don't?
No.
Okay. You should. Good reads. So... good examples of books he's written over the years, 5 Dysfunctions of a Team.
Okay.
5 Temptations of a CEO. Most recently, he wrote a book called The Advantage. And then another one that came out called The Ideal Team Player. So all of it centers right here where we are in HR Hardball, talking about how you build lasting cultures in companies.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge fan. And so I owe credit to not only him, but a group called The Table Group, which we have been working with for the past couple of years, who has helped us define who we are, why we exist, what's most important right now in our organization, what our core values are.
They came in and helped you kind of capture that?
Absolutely.
Now, when you do something like that, because your business model, for people who don't know, how many of them, I mean, it's majority franchise.
Yes.
But so are you... including them in your culture? I mean, they're obviously representing the brand. So
absolutely.
I guess so are they included too when you're gathering input from everybody?
Yeah, it's the important connection here is that I always start with the idea that a lot of organizations define their culture by 5 rocks that are on a little wooden plate that sit on your desk. And they might say things like trust and integrity and respect and whatever, right? Which are... the easy ones to come to, and there's nothing wrong with that. Those are all great values to put into your value system. But the question is, do you live it each and every day? Can you 95% of the time or better say that you really deliver on those? And so we have organized around a set of core values we believe we can execute to every day. Once you define those, then your job is cascading those through the organization.
Yeah.
And you communicate and communicate and communicate. It has to live and breathe in everything you do. And you know you've arrived and you've done this when the newest member of your team, in a just introduction to them, I had this happen today. As a matter of fact, I was introduced to a new leader in the UK, and she was telling me about her experience so far, and she used two different demonstrations of our core values in her conversation with us. One was entrepreneurial, which we need to maintain in our international development. The other's fun. You know, she loves the idea that we have fun as a company. So breaking all of that down and working it through your organization is something you have to cascade it and communicate it to everyone all the time.
Yeah. Well, and they have to, I guess that goes all the way down to your crew members too.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think it's every constituent within that you serve. So it's your team members in the office. It's the guys that are, you know, cooking the wings in the restaurants. It's your shareholders. It's your supplier partners. It's the community around you. It has to transcend everything in order for it to be everything and for you to live it. And so that's how we do it.
So you've got, you have a culture, you have a message. It sounds like you guys have a, you know, you're reading from the same playbook and all that, and everything's going along good. And then COVID hits.
Mm-hmm.
And I know from just our conversations previously, you were able to pivot pretty quickly. A lot of it because some of these things you were already, I don't know if you were foreseeing them. You thought this was the way business was going to go anyway. But how about we'll start there with COVID. Did it impact, you know, your core values? Did you find out something about your company that you didn't know before?
Yeah. Well, yes, definitely. I think we found out many things we didn't realize. I mean, no one plans for a pandemic. I would love to say that, you know, we looked back and said it's been about 100 years, it's time. But that's not how we organize our business, nor is anybody. And as we entered this time in early March, and all of us went through what we went through, we recognized that there are elements of those core values that came alive very quickly. One of those values is being service-minded.
Hmm.
And we have a lot of people we serve. As you mentioned, we're a franchise company, and we have to serve those franchisees. And so immediately, we pivoted to communication. What are we going to do? How are we going to do it? Who's in charge of what? And we actually started a two-a-days. We called them two-a-days.
Yeah.
We had two meetings every day with about 25 people on our team that were part of a task force, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
And we didn't take the weekends off because you don't take the weekends off in the restaurant business. And we watched everything that was going on around us and reacted to it as best we thought. And we made decisions. And one of our, what we call our negative values, is indecision. And we counter that with we should not be indecisive. We can't be siloed as a company. We have to come together and grow. And so as we put these value systems to work, we certainly saw it happen. That we were better communicators, we were engaged with our team and had them engaged with us, with our franchisees, with our team members in the restaurants, and we were able to pivot very quickly.
Well, you know, it's funny because we talked about in HR, this was the leadership moment for HR. We had to, you know, because of the impact it had on people, personal lives, professional lives, and whatnot. But that's nothing compared to what a CEO. I mean, you've got the operations side and the people side. You own it all.
Yeah.
Who do you seek counsel from? I mean, how was you don't make those decisions in silo either. Who helps you?
A lot of people. I think I've heard you say this on some of your previous podcasts, but this is the year of HR.
Yeah.
In a big way. And I've always been a believer in that, but it's been very hard, and probably the hardest job you have as a CEO is to put those principles to work. Over the years, made many mistakes, failed along the way. But I think, you know, not only have I taken advice from people around me today, but I've also learned from the mistakes of the past and also watching those things that are done well. My goal was always to build this organization around its people. And so you have to have a great people leader in our organization, which we do, and a guy named Donnie Upshaw. And I seek a lot of counsel from Donnie. We have open, honest, candid conversations. He tells me where I stand, vice versa. He's tied in to our organization. He knows how people think and feel. And it allows us to be, as I mentioned before, very decisive very quickly in how we progress. But it is a people first time, if there ever was one. It always should have been, but now more than ever, given what we're going through, people need to hear from leaders, and they need to have clear direction.
And how are you communicating out to all your franchisees and everything?
We do it a number of ways. I've always believed that about a third of whatever you send out actually gets read.
Yeah, okay.
So two-thirds doesn't, which means you've got to continue to communicate all the time. So we use every medium possible. Written, verbal, we call them. So we have a team of people out in the field that will just pick up the phone and start calling franchisees, telling them what's going on. Hey, did you read this? There was an update on what's going on in California with the spread of COVID or a shutdown that the mayor of LA has put in place, things like that. And so we're constantly communicating all of that. And then we get them all together at once. We get on a conference call. We do Zoom calls. We do a lot of things. Twice a week at the beginning, now once a week, Zoom calls with our entire corporate team.
Wow.
And it's a vlog. I learned that term in COVID. Oh, nice. I don't know what a vlog is. I call it a vlog because I'm kind of old school. Because that's what it says, vlog. And
it I does
know vlog,
like vlog
is a word. I didn't know vlog is a word. But anyway, we have that once a week, and it creates an opportunity to communicate, to talk to people, make them feel included, to have some fun too. So sometimes we get together, we dress up, we do things, costume days, happy hours, things like that, all virtual. We find a way to communicate every means we can.
So I was just thinking about this too. The company I work for, we're in 5 states, pretty big markets. And then you think of, okay, so I have 5 executives to think about, executive orders and governors and mayors, whatnot. God knows how many of those you have to deal with. How do you juggle all the different, there's restrictions and red state, blue state, restrictive, non-restrictive, super spreader events, the rest of it. How do you deal with all that?
Well, a couple of ways, and you're right. We have 44 states, 10 countries around the world. It's quite a process. It goes back to people and making sure that they know what they need to know. They know where to find information. They know how to cascade that information and do so effectively. That's a big piece to the puzzle, is just making sure people are well-informed and aware.
Hey, HR. Hopefully you're liking what you hear so far. And if you do, please check out some of my former episodes. Subscribe. I think there's like a bell on there, too. You can be alerted. I'm new to this game. But also, you can check out my blog. That's where this all started 10 years ago, hrhardball.com. Please subscribe, read the articles, get on the list, and let's hardball.
So one of the things we immediately did was shut down all our dining rooms in our restaurants. And if there was anything that was foresight that we had about managing in a pandemic, it was a huge investment we made over the last few years in creating digital business for our company. And as we know, everybody likes to go on to DoorDash, or they like to transact business online with their restaurants and either go pick it up or have it delivered. And going into the pandemic, 40% of our sales came through digital channels, which was second only to big pizza companies. And that investment paid off huge when we shifted to this world, because people trusted us. They knew we had good technology. It was seamless and effective. And we were able to shut all our dining rooms down, which were only about 40 or 50 seats, but we lost 20% of our revenue overnight and replaced all of it with a good digital platform, where others were scrambling to go put technology in place that they didn't have because they didn't pay attention to it. We did, and it paid off well. So our ability to navigate some of the difficult situations was mitigated by not having customers coming into our restaurants.
Yeah. I mean, when I've got the app on my phone, I have already. So you've got how many employees do you know total?
A little over 25,000.
25,000 employees. Mm-hmm. And, the first time, and we talked about this a little bit, there was a lockdown. We all went through the lockdown. And then it was sort of soft lockdowns. And then we finally got to executive orders, 25%, 50%. And it's going to be hard to put the genie back in the bottle now, but we hear talks about it.
Right.
You put out a post the other day, kind of got a lot of calls, and it got a lot of views.
People are calling about it right now.
But it was, I thought it was great because, you know, we have to play, a lot of people play the kind of the, I don't know, they want to play the game where they have a foot in both worlds and not take a position. And I mean, you're pretty clear here in your post. It saddens me that small business owners and chain leaders in our industry are portrayed as a problem by local politicians while so many work so hard to provide a safe, comfortable environment. And you're talking about as a result of a lockdown when a lot of people then will be out of work again. That's a brave thing to do, to put it out there, number one. So, you know, do you want to talk about that a little bit, your stance on that? Because the lockdowns are obviously, they're going to continue to be talked about. We're seeing another surge. I mean, we're seeing it. It's not made up. I know first time around, I don't think I knew anybody that had COVID. I know a lot of people this time around. It's pretty prevalent. So it's out there. Lockdowns. How do you, as a CEO, now you're looking at it again, this might happen again. What are you doing?
Yeah, it's interesting. We've reflected on this a lot as a team, that although our business has been up as much as 30% this year, we've enjoyed fantastic results, and we're building new restaurants when a lot of restaurants are shuttering their doors, we recognize that we can't just sit back and say, hey, look at us, aren't we great? We noticed right out of the gates that our performance was ticking up, and watching this firsthand when the first lockdowns occurred, I've been in this business my entire career. I know how important it is to people's lives. The restaurant industry itself is the second largest employer in the United States. If you combine all the people together, it is the second largest employer in the United States.
Who's first?
Government.
Government?
I believe it's correct. Well, collectively, right?
Good God.
And okay. So you think about all the, you know, millions of people who are out there taking care of guests to provide them with a dining occasion. Originally, when I saw this, I said, you know, gosh, there's no way the grocery system alone can feed the entire United States of America.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, grocery and restaurant balance themselves against demand for eating occasions.
I never even thought of it.
You don't even think about it, right? But everything's in a balance, right? So as soon as you shifted and took away the restaurants, demand for grocery went up. And if you remember, the shelves weren't stocked. They weren't able to make enough product to ship it into the restaurants. And then, of course, at beef packing plants and other places, people were getting sick, and that was causing short-term supply disruptions. Prices are going through the roof, right? Everything went crazy. Grocers had the greatest year of their in many, many years. The restaurants have to be open in order for us to do business, in order for people to be fed, period. There just isn't enough capacity out there. So you have to keep them employed. And yet so much of our unemployment was driven by restaurant workers being out. And so early on, when we recognized our good fortune, one of the things we did is Guy Fieri, the great chef, put out
Dives and Drive-Ins.
Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. Exactly. He created a foundation called the Restaurant Employee Relief Fund.
Did not know that.
Yeah, and he publicized it on Food Network. It got the news and all that. And he ended up raising something like $28 million in three weeks. Wingstop committed $1 million to this of our good fortune.
Wow.
And the whole premise was to give $500 to anybody who applied that was working in the restaurant industry with the idea that they need money. They weren't going to get, you know, it was before the stimulus. The stimulus came along. It helped a lot of people out. And it was great to at least do something to give back to those people. Now you fast forward to where we are today. COVID cases are increasing. People are anxious. There's no stimulus package sitting out there. Why? Because our politicians can't get together and work something out. It's sad. And at the same time, we're blaming restaurants, bars. I can understand bars to an extent because people gather in such large crowds. It's hard, but nonetheless, these institutions, these are small businesses primarily, and they're employing people at relatively low wages who need this money to survive. And immediately it's like, okay, pandemic's back, we're spiking cases, shut them down. Well, it's not the restaurant's fault. In fact, I've watched carefully, and I go out and I eat at restaurants carefully. those team members in those restaurants, those employees are doing, I believe, an exceptional job at wearing masks, creating a sanitary environment, right? Because they're being scrutinized. But yet it's the customers. A lot of times it's people in general that sometimes abuse the privilege of being able to go out and they spread the disease. Or they go to places and gather outside of the restaurants that nobody's talking about enough, right? And I think people are trying to figure out a way to police that, but the reality is they're out. And so they're not helping each other and one another, but the scapegoat, the blame, goes to the restaurant worker. And so they end up out of a job without a stimulus package. So it was purely, that statement was, it wasn't purely contrived. It was just one morning I woke up and we have a morning meeting with our team, my team. We have 15-minute stand-up. And I said, you know, I'm really frustrated by this because the risk of having this happen is more people out of work. And then I just dropped a post on LinkedIn.
Let's talk a little bit about Hoops. Hoops is how you recruit and hire top talent. The Hoops Talent Acquisition Solution removes exhaustive tasks in the hiring process, such as finding candidates, screening, candidate follow-up and support, and interview scheduling. God, that's a pain. Give me some of this. Each and every candidate will feel engaged and get the chance to show who they are and what they can do, ensuring a remarkable candidate experience. If you'd like to learn more, go to hoopshr.com.
And it was, you know, straight from the heart. That's how I feel.
Caught a little fire.
It caught a lot of fire. I was a little surprised. I'm like, oh, whoops. But no, it was great. And I think that is an indication for me and for other leaders. And I've pushed on this when I get the opportunity to speak, just like now. When you're in the role I'm in, you're given a lot of authority, a lot of decision-making authority, and what you say can matter if you leverage that properly. And in this case, we do need to speak up a little bit. We do need to speak honestly. You got to be careful what you say, of course. But in this case, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, hey, you know, we can't blame others for it. We've got to do it. We got to all step in on this together, and we'll stop this thing without having to just shut down certain.
Well, meanwhile, you know, there's going to be millions of people on planes this week, and it's the biggest travel dates of, and I've
definitely,
you know, I've been traveling throughout this whole thing.
Yeah.
Do you remember, roughly, when did we get the okay to open like 25%? Restaurants were all of a sudden able to maybe do 25%. I know that's not a big part
June,
of your,
late June.
Was it June?
Probably. Yeah. Sometime in June.
Since June, it's been at least twice a week we've gone out to eat. You know, we want to support. Mm-hmm.
We've been doing it.
Over tipping our folks and, you know, seeing a lot of people that, you know, you build relationships with some of these people that you've known over the years. I mean, golly, right. They become, and being, in some ways, being vilified for it. I've had to quit Twitter twice for getting in flame wars with people who are willing or, I don't know, maybe they're able to stay inside and not do anything for the next 8 months and wait for a stimulus check. Not everybody's in that kind of position.
I mean, the stimulus is, like you said, I mean, we shouldn't be waiting for it. It should be a necessity to address a material issue, but I think we may be addressing the wrong material issue. And it deserves at least some attention to say, look, you know, a restaurant worker, that server that's bringing you your meal cares deeply about their paycheck. And so they're being way diligent. I mean, have you seen one yet that is not being totally diligent? And that's kind of my thought is if they're being diligent, can't we to support them to keep their jobs? And, you know, these answers, well, I'll just go order online and have it sent over. Well, you're still, I mean, casual dining, you know, sit down restaurants through no fault of their own are getting shut down. It's just sad.
Yeah.
And I don't want to compete in an environment like that. I'd rather compete where there's 11 playing field, right? And, you know, look at college football right now, right? So many times your team gets decimated by the virus and that you still have to put players on the field and go play. It just doesn't feel right because you're not competing at the same level anymore.
Well, it's you know, this happened to me last weekend. I was ready to watch the Aggies play, and it was like, wait, what? Another one? I mean, we got postponed again.
Yeah,
and so it's you know, probably the best season we've had, and I don't know how long. So of course, it would be the year that it won't count.
It's got an asterisk on it.
Yeah, it won't count. Yeah, it's got an asterisk. But I hate it because, and I understand part of the reason is it becomes arbitrary, and then it becomes visual. Like, okay, well, that's a place where people congregate. They shouldn't, they don't have to be there. It's not considered essential. Mm-hmm. That's how it's going to be defined. Just mm-hmm. as, you know, a lot of people were found out they weren't essential workers. A lot of people find out their business is not essential.
Yeah,
which is a, I don't know. I don't even want to get into the definitions of it, but yeah, I think you're right though. We have to, people who do have some sway need to speak out because mm-hmm. otherwise it's real easy for somebody to sign an executive order.
Yeah. Or it's just as easy to sit back and be quiet.
Oh yeah. Well, right? And just let the chips fall.
Yeah. I'll just rely on somebody else to go take care of it. Right.
Yeah.
It's hard, but I think we got to do it. And you're right. I mean, it got a lot of play, and a lot of people said, you know, thanks for saying what's on all our minds.
Yeah.
So I didn't expect that morning to be that guy, but I'm happy to be that guy because I believe in it strongly. And
I got people telling me I was selfish.
Is that right?
I think you're just a nicer guy. That's probably what it is. I say other things that probably are pretty selfish. So maybe I'm just carrying that around. All right, so let's back up a little bit. You are a K-State grad. Mm-hmm. I've never heard you actually talk about K-State. I lie.
Yeah, rarely.
All the time. And 1990 grad?
Yep.
Now, did you study finance?
Business.
Business.
Actually, management, MIS.
Okay.
Was my
Management Information Systems.
Choice.
Is that what that was back then? Yeah, MIS.
Well, it was pre-PCs and... yeah, they were just coming alive, so it was.
So did you take BANA? Like, did you take BANA?
Was BANA?
That
no.
Business analysis. That was the big.
Oh
deal.
Yeah. Okay. BANA. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yes, I definitely took business analysis. Yes. Yeah.
Now, did you know you wanted to get into what did you want to do? I mean, business is such a big overarching degree.
Yeah. Well, it was a good change of pace from civil engineering that I started in, which. Wasn't really my forte.
Okay.
Yeah, so bridge building and heavy construction is not my thing, and I realized that pretty quickly, but that's what got me to K-State. So I was like, all right, I'll try this. That didn't last long. Went into business with the idea that I'd come out and, you know, kind of find my way, figure it out. It was interesting. I worked my way through college to, you know, get everything squared away and get my degree, and I ended up working on systems, and I had a professor in college that inspired me, and I needed it because it was at a time when life had changed dramatically for me. Debbie and I got married. We had a child before we graduated, and we were trying to figure out what we're going to do in life, and my professor said, you know what, you're going to need this skill when you get out of college. So I really recommend you learn how to program in
really?
A language. I said, okay.
Learn to code?
Yeah, I was coding. And so I said, what language? And he says, COBOL. And I said, all right, that's the language of business, right? And so I said, all right, how do I learn it? And he said, well, my wife teaches COBOL, you know, for a living professionally, but she could probably tutor you a couple nights a week and help you learn this language. All right. So I had nothing to lose. New kid on the way, all that. Newly married, no money. I got to figure out what the heck I'm going to do. So I did that, and I learned COBOL. I got my first job at Rent-A-Center managing accounts, so I had nothing to do with COBOL. But I did get really good at repossessing furniture and vacuum cleaners and things like that, which was no fun. A friend of mine called me, and he said, hey, he was at Pizza Hut at the time. And he said, you know how to program, don't you? And I said, yeah. He said, I thought you did. I said, I'm okay. I don't know. And he said, well, we have a job. And that job is programming in SAS, which isn't COBOL, but I'm pretty sure you can learn it. So you want to come interview for it? And I said, sure. Went down there. Used my charm, interviewed, got the job.
And you still got the job?
Sold the fact that I could program. And then they said, all right, here you go. And so I started my career, really, in programming. I'd write 3,000 lines of code every now and then, looking for thieves. That was my job.
Really?
Finding thieves. Yeah. People are stealing money from us. I had to go find patterns that caused us to inspect the restaurants and go find the money.
Oh, so these were the people... who are running the restaurants.
Yeah, yeah, they're stealing
grifting.
Money. Yes.
Gotcha. Nice.
Yes, that's how I got going.
That's how you got it?
That's how I got it.
I had no idea. Yeah. So you got into Pizza Hut, and then at some point, we're going to have to explain what this is to millennials out there, but
sure.
At some point you worked for Kinko's, which is a place that makes copies, and for copies are made in an office, which is another piece of paper that comes out that looks like something on your computer screen. But there used to be a store that did that.
Yeah, we didn't used to have printers on our right next to us all the time. Yep.
So was that after Pizza Hut?
It was a little bit after. So yeah, my tenure at Pizza Hut, so I was a guy that had the data because I could code, so that helped catapult my career. And I worked for Pizza Hut for about 6 years. Actually, some of my leaders that were at Pizza Hut were running out to Boston Market in Denver, and so I went out there for about a year and a half working on, chicken, because, I figured it, pizza, chicken, it's all the same. And then I got a call to go to this place called Kinko's, which I knew of because in college, as you know, we used to get our course packs from
That's
Kinko's,
right.
And back when we were millennials, and we had to get that information and use it for our classwork. And so that's how that company got started. Well, anyway, they had gotten really big. They were hiring people and got a call from a recruiter and said, yeah, I'll go to Southern California. And what a beautiful place, Ventura, California, right off the beach, Kinko's headquarters. Kinko's is now what's called FedEx Office.
Yeah.
So worked there for a few years, primarily in strategy and product development, developed some .com stuff when the .com world was getting going, and I was on the business side, and we had some tech friends.
What was your role at Kinko's? Were you?
I was VP of product management.
Okay.
Through most of my tenure there, did some finance work as well when I was there in strategy, but that was my primary goal, was building business units within the company.
Now, was that your first big leap into a huge role?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. It certainly helped catapult my career from there, and I had a bit of a jumping off point to figure out where I go from there. So we sold that company to FedEx. And from there, I said, all right, I can go one of two paths. I can stay on this product strategy development role, or I also grew up in finance through audit and everything I did. And so I could go the finance route. And I chose to go be a CFO after that for an old brand called Steak and Ale.
Oh, God, I remember Steak and Ale.
The president job came open, and they looked at me and said, you want to do this? Yep. So it wasn't quite that easy, but I became the president of Steak and Ale. And then I did that for a few years, got back in the pizza business, went to Pizza Inn, which was a really tough company to go into because it was troubled, needed to find its direction. It had lost it over the years. And we helped shore it back up and then created a new brand you may know called Pi Five.
The Pi Five.
Yeah. And that actually became the catalyst for me going to Wingstop and becoming their CEO 8.5 years ago. So
it's funny because I don't think I could tell you where a Pizza Inn is, but I could tell you where three Pi Fives are. Is that their main brand now?
Well, it's not their main brand, but it was based here in Dallas, so we started it here, and we've got them all over the place, and it developed and grew really fast. Pizza Inn still has somewhere in the range of 200 restaurants out there. Most of them are in small towns in the southeast part of the U.S., which is also where Pizza Hut still has their old Red Roof restaurant. So that's they were competing brands. They were actually formed in the exact same year, and one became this humongous company, and the other one's kind of this brand that's kind of
lingering along. Oh, the Inn and the Hut? Really?
Yeah. Same company. Or same year.
Man, so you're like a pizza historian in many ways. That's pretty awesome.
Pizza and wings.
Pizza and wings. Yeah, is cheese together. In a good place these
cheese
days?
Cheese is... I have no idea where cheese is.
How are wings? Are they in a good place?
They're expensive right now.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, everybody wants to sell chicken wings right now. It sucks. Well, so they're not in a good place right now.
Now, is it true that wings used to be the part they used to just throw away? Yeah.
Well, they didn't throw them away. We've been around 26 years, and the first... prior to that, and for probably the first 10 years of our existence, most of the wings were exported back to Asia, where wings are a great snack food. The little tip at the end of them is considered a delicacy. Yeah, go there. And they like the tip. I knew that was coming.
That was not me.
You can't put the two of us in one room.
No. So, and how long have you been at Wingstop now?
8.5 years.
8.5 years. Golly, time's flown.
Yeah, it's really going by fast.
So you've been in, you started in, you know, it's kind of funny. You look at the amalgamation of things that you've experienced, like you have a professor that tells you you need to learn COBOL, and it kind of leads you in one way, and then you learn a little bit about this, and somebody gives you a call and goes, hey, we have this. You don't know it, but mm-hmm. yeah, you'll learn it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, things like that have happened throughout my life as well. It's kind of one of those, you know, that's why you have faith. Faith over fear,
amen.
Right? I mean, there's a plan.
Agreed.
So when you look back at your career, there had to be some lessons learned that you still carry with you to this day. Is there any special lessons that you learned along the way that you carry with you now?
Well, many. I always tell people that if you're not learning, you're not going to grow. And I think it was one of the early lessons I was pushed into when I was at Pizza Hut, which was owned by PepsiCo at the time. And it was a great culture and a great organization to really learn from some leaders who have gone on to do exceptional things. And what I was told was, when you're at work, you're being paid to learn.
Hmm.
You're not just being paid to do a job. You're being paid to learn. And if you take that mindset into everything you do, the more you learn, the more you will grow in your career. And too often I've seen people who feel as though they've reached a level where they, of course, deserve to get to that next spot. And the hard conversation, the hard HR conversation to have is, well, you really haven't demonstrated you have what it takes to do that next role, to grow to that next level. And so I always kept that in the back of my mind. I actually kept a sticky note on my cube for years that reminded me of that, because I thought it was one of the great lessons, which is you're always learning. Hmm. And I think that's a life lesson as much as it is any other lesson. But if you don't, it's going to be hard to grow.
Yeah. Well, you get comfortable. And a lot of people think tenure is the biggest qualifier.
Yeah.
To be promoted. And that hasn't been true for some time now.
No. In some places, maybe. But I don't think.
Yeah, those are the places you don't want to work.
Those aren't the places I'm going to work, right? Yeah. So not here.
I can remember back in the day when I worked at Alcon, we'd been mm-hmm. there. I worked there 11 years. Great company.
Yep.
Fantastic company, but very patriarchal. I mean, it was, unless you saw a hearse pull up, spots were not opening up top.
Yeah. I think that breeds complacency at some point. And yeah. Ultimately, the organization isn't going to maintain its strength. I mean, you guys had a great run.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But, and great people were leading it. But yeah, it's hard. It's hard when it's a big company, too.
Well, and you have four adult children now.
I do.
You've had a hell of a year.
I have.
In addition to COVID, how many weddings this year?
Well, in the calendar year, 2.
Yeah.
And in the last 12 months, 3.
3.
Out of 4 kids. 2
3,
girls.
3 out of 4 kids. You had 3 weddings. Yeah. 2 girls.
Yep.
First grandson,
first
grandchild.
Yep.
So it's been a pretty big year for you personally.
It has. It's been one for the books
yeah.
for this whole world. But yeah, we managed to just feel like the pandemic wasn't enough, so we're going to take more on. And we did have all these weddings planned. It's been a tough year in a way. My youngest daughter got married right before the pandemic. My oldest daughter, I think as you know, was scheduled to get married in June. That got delayed to October. It's an amazing story, but she was scheduled to get married in 2 days before the wedding. The forest fires that added to COVID, that added to the murder hornets and everything else in our world, affected Estes Park, Colorado. We got evacuated, had to replan a wedding in 2 days. But I think it's a testament to the fact that this year teaches you nothing more than you're not in control. And you got to have faith, as you said, and it is one of the greatest examples of how we all need to live and live with faith.
The paralysis that people get stuck in with fear and wondering what ifs, you know, you just have to pretty much say, yeah, when if it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
All right, things are going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's a when if,
mm-hmm.
and in the meantime, if you're waiting for it and fearing it, you're definitely not doing what you're saying, growing or learning or risking or trying or any of those things.
Agreed.
And that's how you push. That's how you push things to the next level.
Yeah, you have to. I think we're going to get better through all this.
I do too. There's going to be we still got a little ways to go.
Oh my God, yes.
I think, today is, what, the 24th or 23rd, 24th that we're recording
24th.
This?
Yep.
And I think I heard today that Trump has given the GSA the go-ahead to start planning the transition.
I heard that.
He's not conceded, but he started the transition, which at the very least I hope stops talk that he's going to barricade himself inside of the White House like Tony Montana. And
yes.
I mean, he's an obnoxious competitive person, but I don't think he's quite that militant.
No.
So, yeah, for the country, it's been a hell of a year. I mean, I know that, you know, a lot of times, you know, my dad used to say when you squeeze, you don't know what's inside the tube until you squeeze. Mm-hmm. So we got squeezed pretty good, and I think we saw a lot of the warts along the way.
Yeah.
You know, and with your company, it's funny because we're going to talk about lockdowns and we're going to talk about things that maybe are a little extreme and why maybe we shouldn't do lockdowns. It doesn't mean that you're not taking it seriously.
Oh, of course.
And that's one thing. I mean, you guys, you lost some people, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. You did. Yeah, very early on, we lost one of our great long-term franchisees.
Yeah.
To the pandemic. It, you know, you mentioned earlier, but early on, you probably didn't see it as much. And then now you're starting to understand that, like, people do have COVID and you know who they are and you know how it's impacted their lives. It was within weeks that we lost what we call our franchisees affectionately, our brand partners.
Okay.
Because they're more than just franchisees. They're helping us, you know, navigate these, you know, these choppy waters of running restaurants for years. And they put a lot, they put their whole life into this. And we lost a great man to the pandemic very early on. And that rattled me. And you do take it seriously because we only have 270 franchisees. And I've gotten to know a lot of them, if not all of them, over my 8.5 years here. And in many cases, they become like family. And it's tough. It's tough to deal with that. And so seeing that happen and seeing friends whose parents or others have passed away it makes it hard and it causes you to really reflect.
Yeah, it does. And you have to, I think there's ways to take it seriously and do it respectfully.
Yeah.
And also, you know, this is the greatest country in the world. We have mm-hmm. we have to continue to do the things that made us great as well. I fully believe that. I know that I've been lucky enough too, fortunate, however you want to say, to mm-hmm. not only continue working, but got a better opportunity out of
you
all
did.
This. Yeah. So you never know what's going to happen out of this. But, you know, Karen's job was impacted. She lost it. If mine had, okay, we'll find out. Whatever. Something's going to come along. I mean, it is. And I just think there's a mindset that we can't lose. We can't lose the mindset by getting driven into fear.
No.
And a lot of that is what we're eating with the media.
Unbelievably so. Yeah, nobody, you don't know what to trust. You don't know what direction you need to go. I was reflecting on this over the weekend and I watched a show, but it talked about the fact that, you know, so much now of our culture is starting to create opportunities to incite fear into people to go against each other. And it might happen from within or it might happen from the outside where people are doing this and they're using social media as the platform for it. What happened to Facebook being about, you know, your children and their accomplishments and your life and the big moments.
Now cat it's videos just, and puppies and
yeah,
stuff like that.
Like, you know, cute little things running around. Now it's, you know, just a culture of fear. It's constantly working where we have to find something to hate or disagree with or pick a side. And I would love to see us walk away from that. And I don't think it's going to happen by purely the election of a president. I was one of our vlogs, our V-logs, as I like to call them. I was reflecting with my team, who is, you know, Wingstop serves a very diverse audience, not only by race, but by income, by where they live, inner city, out in the burbs, you name it. I mean, we really have this unique culture as an organization and the people we serve. And so George Floyd was killed, and I got on, the vlog was the next day, and I got on, and I just said, you know, I saw this video, I saw what happened, I'm disgusted by it, something's got to give, something's got to change, and we have to talk about it. And usually on the vlog, you got 250 people out there on this call, and I'm like, you know, everybody hit the mute button, please, so that we can speak to you,
yeah,
which is what happens on a lot of these.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? I'm just going to pause. I want to unmute. I want to hear from you. And what happened right there was some of the most raw, emotional, impactful conversation I've ever had with our team. People were crying. I don't think there was a dry eye out of 250 in the room. People were sharing stories about their own experiences of being profiled, about being pulled over in cars, about telling their children that they have to be careful where they go and how they walk down the road and when they can and what to say and not say. And, you know, most of whom were Black people in our team, of which we have, you know, very diverse team. And I reflected on that and I said, you know, I'm a white guy. I don't know that experience, but I know I can listen. I know I can learn. And then I go back to that comment I made earlier that as a leader and as a CEO, what I know I can do is not rely on the politicians to tell us what to do and to make the rules and set the ground rules. But I, myself, through the influence of the 25,000 people that work for us at Wingstop, can do my part to inspire a culture of openness and a culture where we can all get along and understand each other and then take action against those things. And so we've been working against that. So to your point of, you know, politics and what's going on and the leadership in our country, we don't elect a dictator. We know that. We don't have a king. We have a democracy, but it's the people who run the democracy. And too often, I think the media is trying to create this world where we're allowing the politicians to control us instead of controlling it ourselves.
I don't ever remember it being like this prior to the last 3 or 4 years, ever.
I don't either, but what I don't know is how often were things just kind of swept under the rugs and not talked about?
Right.
Because it wasn't either politically correct or appropriate, right? Like I was talking, like leaders, like you're trained very carefully as a CEO, especially in a public company, like be careful, right? You know, what you say, what you do. Well, it's okay to have an honest conversation. It's okay to say, I don't understand what it's like to be in your shoes, but I want to learn from that. And you can affect a dialogue that can really transform not only just that microcosm of the organization you're in, but the world ultimately, if everybody were to do that. And so I think you're starting to feel a little bit of this groundswell where people are going to start communicating again and avoid, you know, the perils, I guess, of sweeping stuff under the rug and being too careful. It's tough, it's hard, and a lot of people aren't comfortable doing that, but I think the more people can be, I think the better off we're going to be. Then we're not relying on one person to make the decision for
us. Yeah, I think we had the world's the biggest Band-Aid ripper offer in office, and he was just putting sunlight on everything. And you piss a lot of people off when you do that.
You do. Yeah, and you can rip the Band-Aid off, but you got to be prepared to offer something
there
to heal,
be a
right?
Salve or a balm. You know, balms.
Yeah, some sort of balm to fix that, right? But I think we were just ripping off Band-Aids, to your point, sometimes.
Man. Yeah. Crazy. And,
you know, but we needed that. We needed that.
We did. You know, it's like this, what was Jack Nicholson was the Joker, and he said, you know, this town needs an enema. I mean, this country needed an enema.
Yes.
I mean, we really did. Yes. And hopefully we got it, and hopefully the media returns to reporting news instead of whatever it is, being entertainment. And hopefully we do get some, you mentioned conversation, having the conversation. I can tell you that, you know, I'm still seeing some of this. This is why social media is just, you know, it's a cesspool right now, I think, in a lot of ways, is you can try to have a conversation with somebody and you can give a little and say, look, I can see your point here. You know what? I can admit the flaws of my, because you're painting me as if I'm all one thing, and that's not true at all. Mm-hmm. Can't you see some fault in what you're saying too? No, because I'm dealing with all facts and you're whatever. And, you know, if that's your starting point, you don't have conversations.
Yeah, somebody taught me, or I learned this over time, when you're dealing with people and culture, is to avoid the fundamental attribution error. Like, because of who you are, I'm going to attribute certain things to you. And by definition, you're already labeled or in my mind, I'm assessing you a certain way, which is a big mistake. And that's why that conversation of learning, help me understand, is better than I believe you think X.
Yeah. Right?
And so we do have to do more of that to bring the society together. But we have to have a leader that's willing to do that. I'd love to say I have confidence in that happening. I don't. But certainly we can't rely on the media to tell us how to think.
No.
That's got to give.
You know, and as much as it's about the thing, you know, with the president is only going to be as good as the people who are helping him as well.
Absolutely.
So, you know, hopefully, you know, Biden looks like Biden's going to take the office. Whatever, sure. That's fine. I don't wish him any ill will because, you know, he's leading our country. I just hope he surrounds himself with people who will lift him up and give us some good stuff. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the political scene, I don't know. There's still people on the corner of South Lake and Kimball here waving their Trump flags Friday and Saturday
They're
night.
Still out there.
I mean, it's part sad and part inspiring because it's just... I don't know how to describe it. I've never seen anything like it.
As you said, we live in the greatest country in the world.
Never seen.
And we get the right to do that.
And they can do that.
And that's a beautiful thing.
That's a great point.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so now some important stuff. K-State.
Mm-hmm.
This year?
It's been a hard year. Like, look, none of it counts.
Right.
But this weekend, tough weekend for K-State. They lost 45-0 to Iowa State. After arguably should have beaten Oklahoma State the week before in
right.
a great game, they were decimated by COVID. So unlike the Aggie game, we were one player too healthy, as weird as that seems.
Oh, really?
From terminating the game.
I didn't even realize they had a threshold for that.
So it's a depth chart issue. So each position, linebackers, cornerbacks, whatever, if you limit yourself to only a certain amount in depth in any one position or critical positions, I believe, then you can cancel the game and postpone it. That's ultimately what happens. We were one off from what I understand, and therefore we're playing with a decimated team. We didn't have two of our three starting linebackers.
Couldn't somebody
that are great.
Start coughing, take one for the team.
Believe me, all those thoughts are racing through my head, and I'm like, you know, it really caused me to say, gosh, this season is just
it's
what
whack.
It is. You're just getting some reps on the football field right now.
It's whack.
We had our starting senior quarterback get hurt early in the year. We've got a true freshman showing up who's doing a great job, but he's a true freshman. He's still learning the ropes. And so
it's a weird deal.
But we beat Oklahoma, so I was happy with that.
You beat Oklahoma and you lost to Arkansas State.
Well, we didn't have any players for Arkansas State.
Well, see, there you go.
And we were decimated again.
And you're going to have to remember make notes of those things so in years to come you can remind your grandson, no, this was the COVID year.
Yeah, 2020. Let me tell you a story. There'll be books all over the place on that.
Well, you had some team. I think A&M had played four games. A lot of teams had played 4 and 5 games, and you still had like Ohio State ranked number four at the time.
Yeah. Well, they've played two now, right?
Yeah.
So they must be.
And by the way, Ohio State fans, turns out you were probably underrated because you're really, really good.
Quite good.
Wow. Right. And of course, you can find Charlie on LinkedIn too, and you'll know it's him because he's got an obnoxious Chiefs banner. Also, a huge Kansas City Chiefs fan.
Yes, sir.
Are they going to repeat?
I think so. Of course, I'm a Chiefs fan. I'm biased by this, but just watching Patrick Mahomes last night, or night before last, I guess, Sunday night, just seeing what that guy can do.
He's got to be the most frustrating guy to play against.
Oh,
him or Kyler Murray.
Look at the Super Bowl last year, right? They were dead in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
You've thought, nope, Patrick Mahomes saves the day. I think he's going to emerge as the greatest quarterback of all time. He has it that...
Of all time.
All time.
You know, Collinsworth said that on the damn broadcast, and I was like, okay, you know, somebody check his Yeti because he's sipping something. This is Mahomes' third year. He's won one ring.
One ring, one MVP.
Yeah.
Should have had the second. I'm not a Lamar Jackson fan. I'll just be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, we beat him every time we play him, and he still gets, you know, the recognition, but that's okay.
Well, you got a long way to go before you get to Tom, Big Tom.
Yeah, but, you know, they were talking about stats. Well, did you see Tom last night?
No, I didn't.
Was not Tom terrific last night.
Really?
Stretch. No, he threw two air ball picks in the game. Looked pretty flat. Pretty flat.
That's
he's got a lot of picks this year.
That's a weird team.
Look,
too.
He's turned the team around.
Yeah.
They've got some weapons. Questionable on the coach, but so be it. I think Tom's still great. I mean, heck, he's not a whole lot younger than we are, and he's out there playing football. And what am I doing?
And then you see somebody. Do you see the Joe Burrow injury?
Yeah.
Oh my God,
that hurt.
I mean, no. A lot of this is just. I mean, luck of the draw too, because it's not like Tom Brady's a nimble fellow.
No, he's not. But he's. But I. He truly is in great shape. I wish I could figure out his dietary habits, but I'm not going to do that because he can't eat tomatoes.
You can't eat wings either.
No, heck no.
He can't eat tomatoes?
Yeah, that's what Debbie said. He's like, he has this diet where he doesn't eat tomatoes.
Well, that's just stupid.
I have no idea why.
That's un-American.
It seems to be. Well, it's certainly not Italian for sure.
Ugh. Okay, so I have one question that I ask in every one of my interviews when I was still interviewing people and occasionally still do.
Okay.
So I'd like to ask you this. What is something about you that would surprise people?
Something about me that would surprise people.
Ooh, a cliffhanger. Before we get back to Charlie, let's talk about MC. If you're not using MC data to help meet your hiring goals, you're working too hard. MC is a one-stop shop for labor market data, helping staffing firms and talent acquisition professionals find and recruit top-performing talent. User-friendly tools are packed with compensation and competition data, skills, demographics, and more, making it easy for you to make talent decisions in record time. To learn more about how MC can help your business meet its goals, visit economicmodeling.com. Now back to the exciting answer.
I got to think about this, John. I got to think about this.
That's what makes it a good question.
It is a great question. I always hate these questions, too. These are those questions you're like, why are you asking me this question? I don't want to.
If it makes it any easier for you, let me tell you what my answer to that was.
Okay.
I'm actually an introvert. I'm very introverted.
Yeah.
Around my crowd, mm-hmm. I can do it, but...
Yep. What's your Myers-Briggs MBTI?
Oh, what is it? Yeah. INTJ or something?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah. That would make sense. I'm an ENTP.
You are?
Yeah. Not lead. That's what they say. And I'm like, come on, that's crazy. But that's what I am. And I love being in crowds. I like being around people. I don't have any problem with that.
I guess you got to in your role too.
You have to. Yeah, that's your job. If you hate doing that, you're not going to have much fun doing that. You know, when I grew up, here's something a lot of people don't know about me. I went to the World Skeet Shooting Championships multiple times.
And I as a competitor?
Gold medals to prove it.
Shut the hell up.
I do.
You were a skeet shooting champion?
I was.
World champion?
Yes.
Holy crap.
Just wait.
This is going to be...
Dukes is going to be adorned with some medals one of these days. They're sitting being
that
prepared.
That is pretty awesome.
Yeah. So.
And yes, that surprises me a great deal.
Yeah. So I like guns. I like to shoot things. It's fun.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Skeet.
Yeah. Things of that nature.
Inanimate objects.
Or edible. Anything else that you'd like to share just based on... overall philosophy or anything this last year that has left an imprint with you?
Well, I mean, you look back at this year, 2020, as I said, we're going to learn so much from this year. One of the things I think is pretty amazing about this year is none of us are, you did say you're traveling and I understand why, but a lot of us haven't traveled at all. I haven't been on an airplane since early March.
Wow.
And I run a company that's worldwide. This year, you have to learn is a good demonstration of adaptability.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready to adapt to a new world? Are you stuck in your ways? Are you buried in the idea that you have to have people at the office, or you have to, you don't agree with technology and what it can do? I've seen too many examples where leaders are just set in how they want to do things. And I think leaders have to adapt. And this year is the best example of if you're not ready to adapt, you're not going to succeed in the new world. Because if this had only gone on for 3 or 4 months, we would have swept it aside and said, oh, boy, that was bad. This is going to go on for a long time. This will be, I mean, if you look into the logic of how the vaccine would even work, it's going to take years.
Oh, I know.
And so... This isn't going away overnight. We're going to have to get smarter. We're going to have to adapt. We're going to have to be prepared better. But it's also going to create something new and different. If you think about what wars have done over the years and how they've stimulated technology developments and things that come along that advance the cause, this will be another one of those.
the black swan of our lifetime.
Could be.
Totally. And could I be. And I know I've seen it already, you know, in the minds of some people who were stalwart, you know, old school, that they've seen. It's pretty hard now to, if your company's still thriving, mm-hmm. or at least, you know, keeping afloat, it's hard to argue that bringing everybody back is the thing to do.
Right. I agree. Hell, we just bought a new building for our corporate offices, so, and we're renovating it. And it's like, are we going to bring everybody back to this place? Like, how's that going to work?
I was at our brand new office building today.
Yeah.
And there was two of us there.
Yeah.
And I think it can hold 350 or something.
That's exactly where we are. Yeah. We bought like 75,000 square foot building.
It's gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. And it's it's going to be beautiful. And who's going to be there? And when? It's going to be ready in March. So I'll probably go over there.
Going there occasionally. And it's also nice to know that when Karen kicks me out, I have a place to go.
You have a place to sleep.
It's a fridge.
Right
it's
under your desk. Yeah. That'd be perfect.
Great. All right, Charlie boy, thank you for joining me.
John, thanks. It's been fun.
All right, bud. We're out.